Today's show, we talk about the 12-team playoff format being set and how they're already trying to expand it, plus a candlelight vigil in West Virginia.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
No Hooters in West Virginia.
Wow.
Joe Manchin's wasting time working on NIL. Let's deal with the issues that really hit the people of West Virginia.
Russ Dellinger.
The Alliance still remains the most disappointing and somewhat destructive force impacting the postseason of college football.
And SI's Pat Forty.
However, there's plenty of fresh sin here. We're past the original sin. We got fresh sin. Start with simply the logic.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Playoffs. We got a new playoff plan finally approved for 2 years, and now they're already trying to switch it up. We're jumping off one cliff before land, and then planning our next jump off the cliff. Without seeing. Before that, I don't want to wait to the end to say this. We'll talk about it at the end. This is the last show that we will have producer Sean Anderson with us. Distressing to all of us. Fantastic work, service to the pod. Sean, great service to a really important need in this country, is someone to organize the three of us so we can do this. Tremendous work. Great guy. Great producer. We hope in the future we get to work with you again or individually or some whatever the heck it could be. But thank you for the last couple years here, everything you did for us. So we'll talk. Yes. We'll talk at the end.
Absolutely outstanding work and hilarious dude. Great worker. Great teammate.
Yeah.
Sean, you stink.
That. You won race for the case, and now you're basically, you know, we can't.
Yeah, that's why I said you stink. Screw you and your picks, Sean.
He mic dropped us. I win, and I'm out.
Yeah, yeah, he did. We can't get revenge on him. We can't get revenge on him. Anyway.
I am taking Sean out on the Tizown, since he lives about 20 minutes from me or so, next weekend. So we'll be sending the pod some selfies.
All right.
Drunk selfies.
There you go.
Probably.
Buckle
you
up.
You know what?
Well, selfies.
Yeah, we'll Venmo you a drink.
Yeah, we'll. Who are you guys? No, no, it was great. You got a bright future as a podcast producer or whatever else, and a host. You can do your own college football.
Yeah,
one. So, yeah. What is the name of the show? I didn't. I have it on my thing. I don't want to get the wrong name.
Oh, Hack City is the
Hack
is
City.
The show.
That's it. Right.
Yeah.
Terrific. Very funny. Both you and your co-host. All right, let's get to this playoff, though. Enough with the, you know, we love Sean. It's probably not going to be good for ratings. Everyone else is like, yeah, let's get on with it. All right, they finally approved the 5-7, which somehow took like 3 years to hack through. So I think there's a level of confusion out there, or people can't remember. People are like, wait, I think we've been hearing about a playoff so long. And in college football doesn't have a central authority to promote themselves that like people are like, wait, that's finally this year. Yes, it's this year. So we're going to give you the quick break. Let me give you the quick breakdown of how we got here so that you can sound smart to your friends who don't, because I know all our guys are smart, but are on top of it. But I need to be reminded. So 12 teams, 5 automatic bids now. Used to be 6, but the Pac-12 ostensibly does not exist. So if you win, if you are the winner of the championship game of the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, or the Big 10, you are almost assuredly going to get in. You're in. You're in if you win those things. Those four leagues are almost assuredly going to be in the top 5.
Yeah, very likely. Right,
I think maybe mathematically impossible for one of them not to.
Yeah.
Especially now you have divisions are gone. You're not going to – someone can't sneak in. So these are essentially automatic bids for those four leagues. And then you have one more automatic bid, and it'll be divvied up by everybody else in a conference. So the most likely scenario is the Mountain West maybe the American rewards that, you know, that team that has a great year, maybe goes undefeated, maybe goes, you know, 12-1 or whatever. It is essentially a way to make sure that they don't get sued for excluding half of Division 1A football, whatever, FBS football. Can we still call it FBS now that we finally have a real championship? I don't know. I'd like to 1A and 1AA. I don't know why they went away from that. But anyway, that is your plan. Now, the top four seeds, which will almost assuredly be the champion, the winner of the championship game of the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and ACC, those four teams will get a bye. They will not, one through four will sit as a bye. 5 through 12 will have to play a game in the middle of December. The likelihood is the group of five champion is the 12 seed. So your automatic bids are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, and probably 12. They could move up, whatever. They'll be in that ranking. A playoff committee will sort this out. I'm sure there'll be no controversy whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
Teams 5, 6, 7, and 8 will host a game. They will host. 5 will host 12. 6 will host 11. 7 will host 10. 8 will host 9. That's going to be a big distinction right there. On campus. It does not matter if that campus stadium is the largest in the country in Ann Arbor or one of the smaller ones like Manhattan, Kansas. It does not matter. You will host a game. The winners of those games will then proceed. Now, they're not re-ranking them, right? For the deck?
No.
Okay, so if the 12
it'll be a bracket. It will not be like the NFL. Or it's
right, not the NFL. Reseed. It is an NCAA basketball tournament bracket. So if the 12 seed defeats number 5, so like, you know, whatever it be. 12 beats 5, 12 now plays 4. 1 does not get, 1 is still going to play the winner of 8 and 9. That's how it's going to go. The second round will be at a bowl site. They're using the New Year's 6 bowl sites. At that round, winners of that will proceed to a semifinals, which will be at bowl sites. And then the championship game will proceed to a, not a bowl site, but a location around the country. That is the plan. And it used to be 6-6. Like I saw on the ticker on ESPN, it's like they proved 5 plus 7. I'm like, how many people are going, what is this? I didn't know there'd be math on my ticker, right? I don't want the math on the ticker. I want, like, you know, so-and-so re-signs with the Cowboys. That's what I want. Not there was math, and I got confused. So that is the plan. This is going to be our plan for the next 2 years. So we're going to talk about Notre Dame in a second because there seems to be a great amount of misunderstanding of Notre Dame. But, Ross, you've been all over this. Your thoughts on the 5 and 7. Is this the best plan we could have right now? Are you excited for this plan, which literally is going to take – literally is the plan for the season that starts in like 9 months. Not like waiting to last.
Yeah,
minute.
It's been a long 3 years. I mean, this plan was originally introduced in June 2021. Now it was 6 plus 6 at the time. So what they did earlier this week is just finally agree to drop that to 5-7, given the Pac-12 situation. But introduced in June 2021. Was argued over and fought over for a couple years. A lot of realignment happened in between, a lot of hurt feelings, the alliance, as we all remember. It's been a long process, but finally here. I think it's an ideal model. I think a lot of people in college sports are wondering why they're, you know, already trying to change it since we haven't even played a single game in the new 12 team playoff. But you can point to, as we would discuss later, I'm sure, the realignment and the expansion of everything that happened. But yeah, I think it's a great model, actually. You know, Bob, you know, to take everybody back, a subcommittee in January 2019 was assigned to explore a new expanded playoff model. Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlsby, Craig Thompson of the Mountain West, formerly, and Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame. They were on the subcommittee that created this 12-team, 6-plus-6 model. And it's great. It just, again, as we will talk about later, it probably doesn't offer as many at-larges or access that you'd want given the current realignment situation. But it'll be a blast. The first round, you know, home games on the in the first round should be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I have many thoughts on the potential enlarged field and more automatic bids. We'll get to that here shortly. But look, this was a very good playoff that they created, the 12-teamer. And they pushed it through a lot of pushback, a lot of politics, a lot of other things. I think it's going to be good. We still haven't seen it, which is another reason why the move to change it before we've actually even seen it is completely illogical. But yeah, I can't wait for it. I think that everything about it is an improvement over what we had before. And, you know, bring it on. This is going to be a very, very fun season of college football in 2024 and again in 2025 before they screw it up again.
I think it's great. It's as good as we're getting. I'm a major proponent of that second round being on campus also. They could not free themselves. I mean, they could have. They chose not to free themselves of the bowl industry. But as a general deal, this is as good as we're getting. I think that the teams, I think when 5, 6, 7, and 8 host, it's going to be just unbelievable event for that city, that campus, the businesses, the fans, the whole thing. I was at the Michigan Ohio State game last year. And again, I think this is why people just don't even, they're not focused on it, because it's been so much like, what is the plan? And honestly, like yesterday's announcement should have been hyped up. Like it was, like it just, it was like an email came out. And I understand why. I'm not blaming the people that run the college football playoff room, but like you should have had a marching band and like, oh my God, look what we did. Look what we got now. Instead, it's like, what is this? Right. No one knows what's going on. But I was walking into the Michigan Ohio State game, and I stopped and saw a friend of mine, Tom Lickert, and a bunch of these guys do a tailgate. They were right across the stadium. And I mean, did I have a drink? I mean, who's to say? But I was working, so of course,
These the Diag Partners?
No, not
group?
The Diag Partner. Okay. Group. Not the Diag Partner group. Anyway, mm-hmm. I mean, I just run into a friend. And I'm explaining, we were talking about the playoff, and that I'm like, you know, you guys could host, these are Michigan fans, big Michigan fans, but you guys could host a playoff game next year, maybe if they get a quarterback, in Michigan Stadium. Like, Alabama could be here next, like, December 14th or whatever. And they're like, seriously? Like, what? I'm like, yeah. They're like, wow. Like, that would be, like, you know, I mean, this was before the Ohio State Michigan game that was, you know, we had Connor Stallions. We got it all, right? This was as big of a game as they have ever had in Ann Arbor, Michigan, was last year's Ohio State game. And they're sitting there going, wow, that would be like incredible. We'd be back in like a few. I'm like, yes, that's how the plan's going to work. If you're like number 6, someone's coming in. And so I just think even at places like that, this is going to be, that have seen, you know, X number of incredible football games, this is going to be unbelievable. And I am particularly excited about the idea of, you know, a playoff game, like I said earlier, in Manhattan, Kansas, or something like that. Like some town that just, you know, not Columbus and Metro Detroit or I don't know, whatever. Some of these places of, you know, USC hosting a playoff. Okay, well, a lot of things happen in LA, but man, imagine this thing in Waco. You know, imagine this thing in Morgantown. Imagine this thing in wherever. Like, it'd just be so big. I think it's going to be awesome. And then I think the 1 through 4s are going to say, hell, we got to be in on this. We have got to get a host. Are you allowed to bring recruits in for a playoff game? I don't know what they've come to that bylaw, but man, talk about a recruiting advantage. If you know, a week before the early signing period, you've got the biggest game in the history of, and there's only 4 games the whole weekend. Incredible opportunity. I think the on field is what people should be most excited for. And I guess I'm being a little bit of a cheerleader. I just feel college football has no cheerleaders right now. Like no one just being like, this is awesome. And part of it is their own fault because they can't even let the announcement of this exciting playoff go without already saying we're going to muck it up in the future. So, rant over. So, there's one more thing that needs to be addressed, because I saw this all over social media, people talking about it. I got asked about it on some talk radio. Notre Dame. Notre Dame is not in a conference. Notre Dame is thus incapable of being a top four seed in the college football playoff. Notre Dame could go undefeated and win all their games by 40 points, and they cannot be the number one, two, three, or four seed. And stop your chuckling. It's just a hypothetical. Okay. Boise State could do it, and hell, they could be number one. Notre Dame cannot. They cannot be in the top four. And everyone's saying, well, this Notre Dame got screwed. Notre Dame, I don't think they're really feeling bad for them, other than me. Notre Dame, this is it. Notre Dame's got to join a conference. They cannot get a bye. This is a bad deal for Notre Dame. This is not a bad deal for Notre Dame.
No.
Anybody who is espousing that opinion has no idea what they're talking about in terms of this whole deal. This plan was in part written by Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director at Notre Dame. He was on the subcommittee that Ross mentioned. And he wanted this. Notre Dame does not play in a conference and thus does not play a 13th game every year in the conference championship. Ergo, they will get, if they do win all their games by 40 points, they will still only have 12 victories. They will only have played 12 games. So, as part of the deal to maintain its independence, which it treasures and has been very, very good for Notre Dame, they agreed to this deal. If they are good enough to be in the top four, and the, or, you know, how many years are we talking about here? That, you know, maybe, maybe not. They will be the five seed. That's the best they can do. They, though, have access through at-large bids to get into this playoff. So they can always get into the playoff if they are good enough. They do not have to be as good as they did under the four team. They can go out and sell to recruits. We're in this thing just like everybody else. And yes, we might have to play an extra game, which could affect us winning, making a harder road to win the national championship. Now, I don't want to say anything down about Notre Dame or Marcus Freeman, handsome Marcus Freeman, or all the kids that there. I don't really think anyone at Notre Dame is sitting around going, well, we might not win the national championship. National championships, a little, we'll cross that bridge when we get to that bridge. They just want to be relevant and independent. And this allows that. Being the five seed, so the years they would give up that bye, they're the five seed, right? Because they would have been the one, two, three, or four. So therefore, they would be the best at-large team. They'd be the best team left after those four get sorted through. They will be the five. They're going to play a group of five team in Notre Dame. That is a very fair trade. That is not a bad thing. That is not a non-competitive. It's not as good as a bye if you're trying to win the national title, but it is a very fair deal. That is not going to be that hard of a game. The group of five team is going to be a significant underdog every single time. Maybe they pull off an upset, and that would be great. Getting these smaller conferences to have a chance and have so important. So important for the growth of the sport, the stability of the sport, the hope for the sport. Like, if you're a group of five fan or coach, this is you are better off today than you were yesterday. You've got a path to the playoff, a realistic one, not all hell's got to break loose and we got to be perfect. And so it is great for power five teams or a group of five teams, which we like. We want all these conferences to be healthy. We want every school in the country, all 130 something, to be like, I got a chance, and I can excite my boosters, and we're playing a game in November that might get us in. Like, the residual excitement that this will bring. But still, you're going to have to go play Notre Dame. So Notre Dame gave up almost nothing, and because their access to the playoff, they do not have to join a conference right now. This was a move to preserve their independence, which they treasure, which has been very good to them. Look, it's not going to last, but they got the number one recruiting class right now. Like, they're recruiting well. They sell out. They get the biggest TV ratings. When Notre Dame comes to your campus, it's the highest price ticket in history or something like that. They remain a big deal. But this was a very, very smart move by Notre Dame. So Thoughts on Notre Dame? Am I wrong anywhere on that?
This is what Notre Dame wants. This is what Notre Dame wants. They don't want to be pushed into joining a conference, but if you're going to remain with access to the playoff, okay, you got to give a little something. That's what they're going to give. They're going to give not having a chance to get one of those automatic berths, but they'll make that trade because that being independent has been so much a part of who Notre Dame is and what they want to be that's priority one. So if they can still have access to the playoff and be independent, they're fine with that.
There's nothing more frustrating, at least for me these days, than a post on social media going viral that is either old news or doesn't provide the full context or both. And that was what happened with the Notre Dame post from kind of an aggregator type of Twitter account earlier this week. And people just lost their minds not knowing that, one, this was now 2.5, almost 3 years old. And two, that Jack Swarbrick, as Dan kind of alluded to, not only was on that subcommittee in part in agreement to all this, Jack, from what I understand, Jack was kind of the ringleader of creating the format. He was really the one to really put things together. I mean, they all did it, but he was the one that really examined it closer than others. And like he has all these documents and stuff and all these spreadsheets and all this stuff. And I remember him telling me for a story about a month after they decided on the format back in June 2021 or after they announced it. I remember him telling me, we don't have that 13th data point for the championship game. And so this is what our compromise or concession, whatever was, is because we don't play that championship game. We took a pass on having a bye. And yeah, absolutely. It was, I think a lot of people at the time thought that was a great thing and a compromise thing for Notre Dame to do. This is something good for, I think, good for everybody, that whole deal.
Yeah. I mean, Notre Dame, as long as they have access to the playoff, they can recruit the type of players that can get them into the playoffs. Yeah. If you do not have access to the playoff, kids aren't going to go there. And most years when Notre Dame I don't know how many years, let's say two out every 4 years, they make the playoffs or something like that. Could be three or four. I mean, they're in a very good spot, but let's say they're good enough to make the play. Most years they're going to be the 7th seed, the 12, the 10th seed, whatever. They're in that mix. The years they can be the 5th seed is the only time they're giving up the bye. The bye is irrelevant if you're number 7. So who cares? You weren't going to get it anyway. The year they give it up, they're the 5th seed. They host, a team they should beat. They're going to be a significant favorite over. At Notre Dame, they're the only game, like, they like hype in their stadium. There'll be a little December snow flurry over Touchdown Jesus landing on the Golden Dome, and there'll be, 15 million people. Like, it's great. Like, yeah. It's just not a loss. You have to have access to the playoff. Notre Dame has access to play. Why would they join a conference right now? People are like, this is it. They're going to have to join a conference. Like, no, this assures they don't
it's
have
the opposite.
To. It's the exact opposite.
Right. Away. Yeah.
The only thing that could drive them to a conference is if the Big Ten and the SEC decide to devour the earth.
Yes.
Which is not out of the question.
Which we may be getting to. But at this moment, this assures that they can get into the playoff. They're in. They have a one-man conference. They just have to be good that year. They got to be 10-2, 11-1. Can you be that? Yeah, they can. They have a nice program. And there's also still this, I got it like 15 years ago. They're irrelevant. They don't matter. They're not any good. They're a good team. No, they're not Georgia and Alabama, but who the hell is or was, right? I mean, we've had like five, Michigan was an upstart. Like, the sport was so top heavy. Like, who the hell were those people? They matter. And now they can sit there and be like, we are independent. We can get in. We got to get in 2-3 times. I mean, their recruiting could even boost even more as people see them as a real playoff team. And man, I'm telling you, these playoff games, one game, the only game being played, we're going to have a whole Friday and Saturday of like that first round. People are going to be jacked up. Like, these are huge TV ratings and everyone's watching two teams. It's like the college football playoff. Like, the exposure you get from that is going to be so significant getting into these playoffs. It can't hurt. Is it going to change anything? Can Notre Dame really build a power that is good enough to win a national? I don't know. NIL helps them, but I don't know. But this is a great, great deal for Notre Dame.
Well, let me say something too, another social media post that kind of took off earlier this week was, and I think it was in relation to this, Notre Dame is right never going to be the power they once were, and they've drifted off and are irrelevant. Notre Dame is one of eight teams, I believe, to make multiple appearances in the CFP era, the last 10 years. Like, this is the last 10 years, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, only one of eight programs to make multiple appearances. And I think they finished in the top 10, I mean, at least three or four times, in the top 15, I think seven or eight times. I mean, come on, you know, I think there's
how many
there's
programs are really better than them?
Right.
Yeah, not many.
Right.
There's
maybe four or six. Maybe. Yeah.
They're in that mix. It's like when people say Penn State's got an incredible football program. They do really, really well. They put out first round picks. They have an incredible stadium. They win most of their games. And this is what the playoff, I think, will help with, is like, okay, they can't get past Ohio State. Well, nobody could until Michigan did. Like, if everything is on, did you win the national title? We're looking at only a couple programs. And I hope that the playoff, what the playoff does is make more people feel like they had a great season.
Yeah, right.
You know, and we got in the playoff. Oh, it's incredible. We won a game. And that's why it's important for the group of five. I think this is going to be an incredible boost for that program that gets in. It's going to be really exciting for them. It's something their fans can rally around. I just feel like those late season games with contenders in the Mount West American are going to be like, everyone's going to start watching, right? I'm going to watch that Mount West championship game. And that's what we want. We want all the conferences to have something to play for. We want mid-major or whatever, group of five football to matter as much as it possibly can. And it matters more now. Everyone's talking about how it's worse. And in some ways it is, like, you know, they've taken teams and you got poaching and all that stuff, all true. But for the first time ever, Boise State finished third. Like, they had a couple top five finishes. You know, they had a team with like six NFL draft picks on it. Not bad. Like, Kellen Moore wasn't, you know, like, they had a good teams. They were like, nah, we're not letting you guys in.
Yeah. No, right. This would be so much better for so many more schools, I think.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back right after this. Now, that said,
get to the point where they screw it up.
They're trying.
Well, it's better for everybody, the 12-team playoff, except probably the conferences with a lot of huge brands who just expanded to 16 and 18 teams. They say, right? They contend.
They say.
So let's segue into
Who the hell made you do that?
That's right. That's a good point.
I did not see the gun point where you said, hey, we got to get 18 teams in here. You know, all of a sudden, all the middle of the Big Ten going, wait a minute, we're never going to make the playoff. You shouldn't have invited these other guys, but you wanted your money. Everything here is about money.
Well, or you shouldn't have accepted the invite for some of those teams.
Or, yeah,
right?
Don't accept it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wait.
We're not UCLA.
US. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, hell. Wait a minute. It's very funny to me that the Big Ten is like, we could possibly have four automatic bids when, you know, we've been saying the whole time, you guys do know that Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State are they're in the way. These are fairly immovable objects. Not easy to jump over. Yeah, some years here or there, but they're coming. They ain't going anywhere. Like, They're going to not stop producing great football players in Ohio and Pennsylvania, and they're the only school to go to. I guess you got UC now, but whatever. Apologies to Pitt and Temple, too, but whatever. They're going to. Anyway, they are talking. My main thing is I would like to see the 12-team playoff play out at least 1 year. Could we at least see what the unintended consequence, the thing none of us are thinking of? That was a mistake. This could be better. Or, oh, this is perfect. Or, boy, we need more of this. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, right? And that's why, like, I wish they had gone second round on campus, but let's see, okay? Let's see. Maybe it's better. I can't imagine how. But maybe it's better not to have the second round on campus. We'll see. But take a step. All the year, this has gone so slow. So slow. I wrote a book, Death to the BCS, in 2009. 2010. We came out with another one. 2010, 2011, something like that. I mean, this has gone so slow. We haven't even seen how the 12-team playoff will work. And they're already talking about expanding the playoff to 14. Not because anyone's going, I got some reservations about how the 12-team playoff's going to play out. Not because you're sitting there saying, will this be good for college football? Will this help all of college football? Will the games be exciting? Any of that? No concerns over that. Simply because we want more money. We need to make the pie bigger. And we haven't even seen what this is. Now, I will say this. We're going to probably be some rather critical of the SEC and Big Ten, which are possibly driving. And I'll have Ross explain what's up next. But this all goes back to the alliance. It all goes back to the foot dragging by the ACC and the Pac-12 RIP. It goes back previously to the foot dragging by the Big 12 and the Big East RIP. They had a deal 3 years ago that would have assured 12 teams, 5 or 6 automatic bids, as it would be, long-term. They could have locked it in, and they said no. And I called them idiots on this podcast and got some blowback. Little harsh, I was told. Yeah, okay. Tends to be a description of me. Proper description. But you take that deal on the table and you run with it. You love it. You grab it. Instead, they're waiting, and now the Big Ten and the SEC are more powerful than ever, and they're looking around and saying, why are we giving you that deal? And you're going to get a worse deal, and it's going to be a worse situation for your conference, potentially, and you're going to be less stable, and there's going to be less reason for your conference to exist. And so the original sin here is not with the SEC. And the Big Ten was a foot dragger, and now they're the monster. They went from predator, whatever, the hunt to the hunter, but whatever. They worked out. But the original sin, I think it's worth acknowledging, is the failure of these other leagues to grab this 12-team playoff for, what was it going to be, 10, 12 years or something? And they didn't. So now we've got the Goliaths of the SEC and Big Ten, and they're talking about, let's expand the playoff and more for us. Ross, what's the latest on that?
First off, Dan, as you often do, nailed it, right? This could have been done 2 years ago with a TV deal that locked in a 6-6-5-7 12-team bracket for beyond 2030. And because of the SEC's Oklahoma and Texas expansion in hurt feelings, I think, and some pettiness. The alliance was formed, lasted 11 months before it was imploded by one of its own. It still remains, as I wrote this past December from the SEC Championship site, the alliance still remains like the most disappointing and somewhat destructive force impacting the postseason of college football in our recent history. It really was. So moving on.
I would just like Wednesdays, to say these conferences pay their consultants millions and millions and millions of dollars. All they got to do is listen to the pod. damn thing is free. You know how much money I could have saved college athletics if you guys just listen to me?
And I'll give charge.
I'll give the premium plus if you want to pay me. But you guys blew it. And you have consultants. That's the funny part. They have consultants that somehow thought this was a good idea.
They have plenty of consultants.
And they are still your consultants. Think about that. They're the same consultants that told you to spend millions of dollars on Congress.
Yeah.
Pod's free, baby. Go ahead.
So let's recap as quick as I can what happened on Wednesday at the commissioner's meeting. It was 9 hours, which I think it was supposed to go 10, but it went so well that they wrapped up in an hour early, actually. Yeah.
Not even I wanted 10 hours of playoff talk.
And honestly, not anything too unexpected that we haven't, nothing that we haven't discussed on the pod. I think two things were supposed to happen. Both of them kind of brought up by the SEC and Big Ten. We've been talking about it now for three or four weeks. They want more access in the CFP, and they want more money. And that means a new format and a new revenue distribution model. Now, we're not talking about revenue distribution on this pod, and they didn't talk about it as much probably as they will later, I think. But the focus Wednesday was on the format, and they discussed the Big Ten, I think, and the SEC. But from what I understand, the Big Ten's a little bit more leading this proposal here. Proposed what we reported Tuesday. Kirk Scholes just kind of came out with it that the Big Ten was going to propose four automatic qualifiers for each Big Ten and SEC, that they were going to go and do this. And guess what? That's what happened, right? That they proposed four automatic qualifiers. And I think that there was a conversation about that. There was a conversation maybe along the lines of three automatic qualifiers or even two. But I think there were multiple models discussed, but in most of the models, the playoff would be 14 teams and would include multiple automatic qualifiers for the four Power Five conferences. Now, that doesn't mean the Big Ten and the SEC, or that doesn't mean the Big Ten, SEC, and the ACC, Big 12 will have the same amount of automatic qualifiers. I don't think they will, if I had to guess, but the gist of it is we're likely headed to some kind of expansion beyond 12, likely 14, and it will have more automatic qualifiers. As many as 12 of the 14 spots will be AQ. Maybe as few as 9 or 10 of the 14 spots will be AQs. There's a lot of different formats there.
How many per conference? Or do you think it'll be like
I think it's a range. So I think for the Big Ten and SEC, it's a range of 2 to 4 for the Power Four conferences. But I don't expect the Big Ten and SEC's automatic qualifier amount to be the same as the ACC Big 12. So maybe it's 3-3-2-2, 4-4-2-2, some kind of mixed match of that. And then in most of the models that they discuss, from what I understand, there's one automatic qualifier still retained by the group of five. And then that leaves anywhere from 1 to 2 to maybe 3 at-large spots. So that's what you're looking at. Now, there's a lot of models in there, and there's at least 4 to 5 different models depending on the AQs. But the bottom line is we're going to see a playoff that I don't think so much of the attention should be paid on adding two teams, even though that's important. It is the locking in of the bids per conference that, to me, is the more important and will have impacts on all kinds of other things. We got a story on Yahoo Sports from the meeting breaking down some of those other things that the fact that you're increasing all these AQs can have an impact on, namely conference championship games and the future of conference championship games.
Think they get rid of them?
Well, I don't know. I think we discussed on the pod back in December. I wrote that story going into the conference championship games about the future of them in an expanded playoff format. There were already questions on the future of championship games in a 12-team format with five AQs. Now you're going to have a 14-team format with 10, 11, 12 AQs. So in a multiple per league, it makes it less incentivizes you to hold another game, a conference championship game. And I think and in that story back in December, several high-ranking figures told me that championship games need to be examined in an expanded format. And they were talking about the current one, not one that will give 2, 3, 4 AQs to the power leagues. So I think you're looking at a situation where conference championship games could at least eventually be on the cutting block. The problem, of course, as I think we talked about in December, is for at least two leagues, the SEC and in Big Ten. Those things are moneymakers.
Yeah, money.
So there's a lot here. A lot. And yes, I will start by acknowledging Dan's point about the original sin. That's accurate, that those conferences blew the situation and helped hand more power to the very leagues that they were trying to protect themselves against. However, there's plenty of fresh sin here. We're past the original sin. We got fresh sin. Start with simply the logic of creating this 12-team playoff and then wiping it out before you see it happen. I wrote a column for Sports Illustrated today, which I compared them to the Tibetan sand mandalas, those, you know, where the monks get together and spend hours and hours and hours creating this intricate, ornate, beautiful sand art, and then they just blow it away. That's what they're doing here. Now, that the monks, what they're doing, they are seeking to encourage healing, peace, and purification. Hmm. That is not what the CFP is doing, okay? None of those things. They are seeking to find more money and more power. And yes, Ross Dellinger is correct. Going from 12 to 14 is significant, but consolidating the number of guaranteed bids in the hands of the few and the most powerful is the bigger deal, and to me, much more problematic, because first of all, why do they need it? They're already going to get the bids. They yeah. should. If they're doing their jobs well, if those leagues are performing well, then the SEC should get 3 or 4. And the Big Ten should get 3 or 4. And the others get 2. But to guarantee it because you can is just taking spots away from someone else and insuring yourself. You're giving yourself a tax break, basically, that you don't necessarily need or haven't earned. If you go to 14 teams, you have buys for the top 2 seeds. You play 6 first-round games. It's essentially the same as the NFL playoff, right? It's 14 teams. But here's what the NFL doesn't do. The NFL does not say NFC East gets 3 teams in the playoff no matter what. Because things change year to year. And all of a sudden, hey, the NFC South is looking good, and they're going to get those wild card teams. That could happen. The ACC could have a great year, and all of a sudden, they should be able to get 3, 4 teams in, but they can't because we've got to get that 8-4 fourth-place SEC team in there, or the 8-4 fourth-place Big Ten team. So it's obnoxious to me that you are grabbing power when you've already got it. You've already got the system rigged to your benefit. You've gotten more money. You've gotten more exposure. You're getting more players. But now you're trying to guarantee your spots instead of earning them. That's what bugs me significantly here. It also undercutting the selection committee that they created, right? It's like, well, we don't trust those guys to pick them, so we're just going to tell you who's going to be in. The whole thing, this is one more example of the rich getting richer and the powerful getting more powerful. I don't like it.
It's going to be a significant thing on the recruiting trail and all that. When if the SEC sitting there and the Big Ten, we got 4 automatic bids in our conference. That league, that's a secondary deal. They only got 1. They only got 2. Right. That is mm-hmm. that is a distinction you do not want to make. Sure. I agree. The main thing with Pat, extra bids, like every year there's going to be at least 3 Big Ten or SEC teams in. Like, how aren't there? How the heck do you have an 18-team conference like the Big Ten that has Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, USC, Oregon, and Washington? Is that 7 teams? And you can't have 2 of them make it. You need to have a guarantee. Like, yeah. This is not important. The committee's problem will be seeding and picking the last group, the last guy, right? And so that right. They're still going to be controversial. It's just unnecessary. And I'd like to see the 12. And the biggest issue with the playoff is the at-large bids. How many at-large bids are there? Because that's what takes away the importance. The one thing we are losing in this, right, undoubtedly, is the huge regular season game, the do or die, the Michigan-Ohio State last year. Now, granted, Ohio State still could have made it in, and the year before they did. That's the problem. They still do get in, even at 4. But if Ohio State, Michigan last year, which I think was the highest rated game in X number of years and all this stuff, great game, great football game, everything we want in the sport, including bitter controversy and suspended people, suspended coaches. If that's a 12-team playoff, the stakes are lower, undeniable. Now you are trading, that game still would have been a bitter blood fight regardless. That's the beauty of college sports. It still matters. You're playing for seeding, though. It's just different. There's a little bit of an edge off it. You can't ruin the other guy's season. And that is absolutely one of the great positives of college sports that is going to change. Now, we are trading those that happen here or there for guaranteed you're ending their season when you play in a playoff game. So
yeah,
as a whole, you're going to get more of them. But it's worth acknowledging. But the more at-large teams you create or the more guaranteed slots you have, the more you devalue that. And so I think, you know, I've always been a playoff proponent, obviously. But I'm cognizant to the idea that games should matter. If you have the limited number of at-large bids keeps those games from mattering as much as possible. And that balance, I always thought, would work, and I think will work. But if you keep expanding, it becomes less and less. And that is a problem. And I saw a quote from, I think, Petitti saying, you know, team might have lost 2 or 3 times. I still want their November game to matter. I understand that, but that's not what the sport really is about, where you're like, oh, don't worry, I just got to finish top 4. I don't like that. I want they probably should at this point go, if they're going to go 14, they should probably go like guarantee a slot for a group of 5 champion and then just do 13 at large rather than we're going to have different amounts of automatic bids based on our league, because that's just a tempting deal for a Florida State. Gives one more reason for Florida State to say, I got to get in those leagues. Even though really they have a better chance of winning their own, but they're going to go for that little shiny object.
A couple things. Just to play devil's advocate and kind of give the side that I've heard from the Big Ten SEC on this automatic qualifier. So obviously both those leagues have expanded. They probably have, 12 or 13 of the top 15 football brands, right? Successful football programs the last 20, 30 years or so. The thought definitely is, number one, we wanted bigger matchups in the regular season, right? Bigger clashes, more difficult schedules. Both leagues are talking about increasing an amount of conference games. The SEC going to 9. You know, there's even talk, I've heard of Big Ten even going, you know, to like 10 or something at some point eventually, you know, down the road. So I think the fear is that, you know, you're playing this difficult schedule and you could lose, you know, 3-4 games. And the thought is you'd still have teams that are worthy and good enough to be in a playoff over, say, right, a 10-2 from another league or something like that. So that is certainly one argument that I hear about the AQs. The other one is the selection committee. And look, this is one where I feel like I'll give my actually opinion a little more here. I hate the subjectivity of the selection committee. I think I've talked about it on the pod before, and all of us probably have done the mock or a lot of us, the mock CFP. And I'll never forget going into this, the media mock thing where you sit in the same room, you go over like a previous year's playoff, right? You see all the numbers on the computer, you argue back and forth of what team should make it. I remember leaving that room thinking, what the hell are we doing? Like, we're looking at game control in these stupid numbers when we need to find a way to pick teams based on what happens on the field. And a automatic berths obviously do that, right? It would be by the conference standings, and you'd have teams jockeying to get a certain position in the conference standings. I'll be honest, I like that part of it. I do. But having said that, you would be potentially at four, certainly AQs. You have to go back historically. You potentially could have like an 8-4, shoot, maybe even a 7-5 team in the playoff. And that's why I think there was probably at first in the room yesterday some pushback on the four, which we may see a compromise to 3 or 2 or something, like some kind of mixture like that. So that's just kind of two little things there.
Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. No, I get that. I do. But who devised the selection committee? These people, same people, conference commissioners, we're going to choose this by a committee. And then we're going to, you know, put out the esteemed credentials of all these smart people who we're going to bring down to Dallas and force feed jalapeno cream corn and game control 5 times. And then we're going to say, no, never mind. We don't like them. We don't trust them because they're not helping my conference enough. Secondly, you're going to go by conference standings, right? You're going to play in the SEC this year an 8-game schedule for 16 teams. How even are those schedules? Big Ten, 9-game schedule for 18 teams. How even are the schedules? You're going to decide, and I guess the conferences will decide there for themselves who the top four are. You can have a conference champion, and you can have a conference runner-up. Who decides who's 3rd and 4th?
It'll be about standing, right?
Strictly by win-loss? Okay, how do you break the ties? Because there's going to be ties.
Yeah, that's going to be a real issue, for sure.
Yeah.
That'll be an issue.
And if you get the schedule where, hey, you know what? You don't have to play Michigan and Ohio State. You get Penn State and you get Washington, you get Oregon. It looks tough, but it doesn't turn out to be as tough as this other schedule. You know, that's going to influence how these things break down. If we decided a committee is not smart enough to figure out strength of schedule, that's what we're basically saying.
That's what they're saying. That they have a committee to sort through.
Yeah.
One of the problems with the BCS, and I spent way too much time going through all these back in the day, but the rankings, when you left it open to this coaches and the Harris poll, they had this thing, the Harris poll, too many people would just, I mean, the Harris poll was ridiculous. Like, 1 year, a guy didn't even vote in the final one. He forgot. Like, what? I mean, we called Harris poll voters the Urban Meyer Utah team. Josh Peters at USA Today, a great reporter, and I, we called Harris poll voters after they beat Alabama in a bowl game. And there was like, we found like 6 Harris poll voters in our first like 9 calls who were like, God, Utah is good as first time I saw them all year. Like, okay. Like, what do we, you're literally determining this stuff. Could you just stay up late and find the, you know, CBS Sportsnet or whatever? Yeah, they're good. They have the #1 pick in the draft and Urban Meyer coaching them. They're good. Okay. So the subjectivity, the playoff committee is supposed to be able to say, listen, man, this is the SEC. These guys had to play at LSU. They had to play at Texas. They had the crossover. Like, they're supposed to sort that out. The subjectivity is still there. It's just being done before. You're just saying subjectively we're deciding that the SEC and the Big Ten deserve 4 bids. It's still subjective. How do we know they deserve 4 bids? I assume in a 14, but in a 12-team playoff, again, I am going to assume that there will be 3 to 4 teams from those leagues in every year. I think that, you know, the ACC and the Big 12, maybe they can get a second team in. Maybe not. You don't know. And then there's Notre Dame. Other than that, who the hell's getting in this thing? You got 11 spots. The SEC and Big 10 are going to take 2. That means there's 9 spots left. Of the 9 top teams, how many are going to be in the Big 10 and the SEC? I'm guessing like 6 or 7. Well, that would be 4. So let it play out. The subjectivity is still there. It is not a good move for the Big 12 and the ACC to get a different amount of automatic bids than these two conferences because they really don't need an extra automatic bid. We know that if Georgia gets in, well, so shouldn't LSU should make it. I mean, like these teams are going to get in. So I just think this is another bit of just grabbing a little turf, grabbing a little more power, grabbing a little more influence. It's not the best for the whole game. And we haven't even seen how we play a 12 team out to go to 14. You know, would it be, is this going to be the death of, no, it's not. It's going to be fine. But I think it's a, this is more political than anything else. It's probably a distinction without a difference, but I'm just not, what if one of these leagues doesn't have a good 14?
Right. They're going to be years when a third ACC team or a third Big 12 team, or God forbid,
or a second.
What if Boise State and Appalachian State are really good in the same year?
Right.
You know?
So, I don't know. All right. Anything else? This is going to be, when would they possibly expand the playoff that hasn't even, expand the expanded playoff?
The expanded on the expanded playoff?
Yeah.
This is all for 2026, you know? So, the next 2 years are set. So,
but
this
when
would all
they
start.
When would they vote?
Yes. Well.
Soon,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, soon. Bill Hancock said that they need to probably have a lot of these things resolved within the month. I think a good timeline would be by the Final Four in early April, that they would have something done by then. Because remember, the TV deal at ESPN, the offer's just sitting out there, right? And it hasn't been signed. It hasn't been agreed to because they can't agree to these other things. This, and it's not just format, right? It's the revenue sharing model going forward, and it's the voting rights structure. Voting rights should be easy to tackle, a little easier than the other two. But yeah, this is they'll probably have a video call. Commissioners will in the next couple weeks, and then I'm guessing they'll meet in person again a couple times before the Final Four.
All right, it's going to be interesting.
Speaking of, you know what? The same people who want to expand the college basketball tournament, even though it doesn't need it, and the people who wanted to expand all the conferences to the kill the Pac-12 are the people who want to expand the playoffs. So that's what we're dealing with.
There we are at. All right. This isn't necessarily people's court, but let's have some frivolity. Did I say that word right? Probably not.
Frivolity.
Frivolity. Unless we have anything else on this. We had a lot. We got like halfway through our rundown, which we went over 45 seconds before the show. All right, we want to close the show, though, with a nod to the Mountaineer fans out there, West Virginia. Maybe some Marshall fans, too. Charleston, West Virginia, great city. You ever driven through there, been there? Gritty. Love that landscape and all that. But it's somber time in Charleston, in the Kanawha City neighborhood, little neighborhood of Charleston. They had a Hooters. They had a Hooters restaurant, you know, chicken wings and other things at Hooters.
Mm-hmm,
probably
mm-hmm.
popular with our audience. I don't know. Maybe some people have been there. It closed down during COVID and never opened back up. Ooh. And the building is now going to be demolished, and they're going to build something else there. And the good fans, the good Mountaineer fans and Thundering Herd fans and anyone else fans there are not happy about this. So they are planning Friday night in Charleston, a candlelight vigil for the demolition of their Hooters. Facebook. A candlelight vigil. It's finally official. This is on Facebook. This is the Hooters of Charleston. I think it's like a fans of Hooters. I mean, they have their own Facebook page. It's finally official. These people really wanted the Hooters to come back. We have all in one way, shape, or form been holding on to pure hope that someone would purchase the closed building down that was once the almighty Hooters. Hooters spelled H00TERS, if you see what that looks Perfect. Like on a font. Yeah. Very good. Oh, my God. That seems to not be the case. The building will begin being demoed February 26, 2000, 24. With that said, let's all gather in remembrance of the amazing power that was brought to us all by Hooters with a candlelight visual. It's a vigil. I mean, this is... This Facebook post is written with just the level of English that you would expect out of a Hooters candlelight vigil page. Visual. I guess. At the Kanawai City location. Bring your candles and signs. Let's let Hooters in the city know we will all miss it tremendously. We will have chicken wings with the traditional Hooters sauce on site and a limited amount of the goat sandwich, greatest of all time, not the goat. The strip cheese. I did not know that was, they have that? The strip cheese. Please share and be there. Every hour is happy hour at Hooters. Look at People's Court. Thoughts on these people? Should they be institutionalized or celebrated? Pat 40. Or Ross Dellinger, let's go first because you got to go. He's still
Ross
here?
Is already gone.
Oh, he's gone. Pat 40.
Yeah. I'm touched. I'm moved by this candlelight vigil for a closed chicken wing restaurant. Maybe arguably my favorite food, chicken wings. Also a major beer enthusiast. You got, TVs that show sports. So, yes, Hooters embodies all the things that I really, really like. I think you are entitled to mourn. You're entitled to celebrate. You're entitled to remember. You're entitled to drink beer outside of a closed building and eat a chicken wing in honor of the late and occasionally great Hooters. So I'm fully behind these people for their candlelight visual. Maybe I'll go join them. It's like 3 hours from where I am, 3.5. I might be there.
Sean Anderson, Justice Anderson.
Yeah, I had to do some digging here. West Virginia's men's team is 9-17, and Marshall's is 12-16. So this is all starting to check out a little bit. I think if they had some competitive programs, maybe they don't care as much about the Hooters going down. But I respect it. Why not? Let them know you're upset about it. Let's get another one built. If we show up and we're rowdy, we like chicken and beer, and they're taking away a chicken and beer place, let's try to get another one. I think I'm standing with the former patrons of the Hooters.
Listen, we've all either been to or seen like when a bar closes, like it's a family bar and whatever they want to sell or whatever. They'll have like a last night party or last week. People will go. Mm-hmm. I've totally seen these and they're great. And it is sad because you spend, that's your spot. I have never heard of one when it's already been closed for 3 years. You can't alive it.
And it's a chain.
And it's a chain. It's a Hooters. It's not. Yeah, right. Mr. and Mrs. McGillicuddy are getting old. They're going to close their little Irish pub. What a great time. Met my wife there. Maybe somebody met their second wife at Hooters. I don't know. Are there any other Hooters in West Virginia? Let me check.
That's the other thing. I mean,
it's got to be, right?
I would Hooters. Hope, but.
Oh, yeah. Oh, not many. Like, not
if,
many.
If Hooters is such a cultural, iconic spot, I mean, I hate to say it, but the good people of the Kanawha Valley area there might be a little behind the times.
Looks like there's one down. Oh, that one's closed. Looks like they're all closed. What happened to Hooters?
Wow.
I don't know.
Hooters moved out of West Virginia.
I don't think Hooters is really that popular. I mean, they had their day, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're a little behind the times.
I'm on Hooters.com. Look at this. I would like to tell HR this is official business.
On the company computer.
No Hooters in West Virginia.
Wow.
Joe Manchin's wasting time working on NIL. Let's deal with the issues that really hit the people of West Virginia.
That's right, Joe. Come on. Get them a Hooters.
I understand the disappointment. The wings are good. I'd never had the strip cheese. I'd never heard of that. No. Anyway, have a great night. Please send us some pictures if you're there.
Yeah.
If you're listening, send us a picture on social media for at the Hooters candlelight vigil. Or visual or whatever else. Classic. All right. We will be back next week with more. Continue to subscribe. Again, thank you, Sean Anderson. And we will talk to you later.